Throughout 2020, public health officials and many lawmakers implored people to wear masks and to stay home in order to stop the spread of COVID-19. Despite warnings, we saw large gatherings around the country that later became super spreader events, and we saw some people avoid masks, among other risky behaviors. What's behind this? We had a conversation at the beginning of the pandemic that looked at the psychological trait known as optimism or optimistic bias. In a nutshell, it's when people don't think that the bad things happening in the world will happen to them. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about optimism bias? What role do you think it has played in the ongoing pandemic? And no judgment if you think you've behaved with an optimistic bias in this situation or others. Want to share your own story? Let us know. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Marie Helwig-Larsen is a professor of psychology at Dickinson College. Marie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we talked to you early last year, I think March or April. You were writing about and talking about the optimism bias, worried about how it might play out as the pandemic emerged. Did that happen? Do you think that this optimism bias is part of what has caused us some trouble over the last almost year?
Absolutely. The bias has been really well established in over 30 years of research in a huge range of domains. Smokers think that they are less at risk than other smokers for getting lung cancer. People who are married think that they are less at risk than other married people for getting a divorce, and so on. So it was really no surprise that in the data that we collected in March, we also found that people thought that they were less likely than other people, just like them, to get infected with COVID. So it is exactly what we expected to think. And what's important is that it's actually useful in general to have an optimistic outlook. And people are not exactly in denial. So sometimes others will ask, well, people are just stupid. And that's really not what our research shows. Our research shows that people wear rose-colored glasses. They view their worlds in optimistic ways that objectively can seem difficult to understand. But I think what we have seen during COVID is that people are extraordinarily attentive to risk information. And that attention sometimes, of course, leads people astray for all kinds of socio-psychological reasons that are well documented.
Yeah, I want to hammer home that point. The optimism bias isn't us being stupid as individuals. It's something that kind of comes out of our human psychology and will get us, especially if we're not aware of it, right?
Yeah, so the more that we think that we can estimate risk and rationalize and gather information, in many ways, we're also more vulnerable to being led astray. So it is objectively, as a risk researcher, I can tell you, because I've been in the same situation as everyone else trying to estimate my own risk of various behaviors, and it's extraordinarily difficult. It's difficult for an individual to know whether wearing or not wearing a mask, if it's optional or in an optional setting, in fact puts you or other people at risk. So ironically, sometimes it's better to actually not try to estimate your risk. I know that seems weird as a risk researcher to say that, but sometimes it's actually better to just dial down the risk estimation and instead follow the rules without trying to worry about whether a mask or not makes perfect sense in this context. We probably don't know that necessarily. So one option is to just follow the rules. And I can give you an example. Probably none of us brush our teeth twice a day knowing exactly the science behind that, why that's necessary. But people don't go, well, I could brush my teeth, why not five times a day or one time a day, right? So people in many areas of their life just either follow the rules or what they have been taught without having underlying data-based evidence to support their behavior. So you could do that too for COVID, right? All the rules don't make perfect sense necessarily or is backed by strong evidence, but you could also just do what you are told or do what makes sense without trying to estimate your exact risk in a given situation.
I want to point out that, you know, most people, I think in many cases, have worn masks, especially inside. A lot of people have been careful about social distancing. We're not doomed by our optimistic bias, are we?
Exactly. And I also think that sometimes I get a little frustrated with the media who seem to love looking for the exception rather than the norm. And the data actually shows that the United States people have been overwhelmingly supportive and followed COVID precautions and rules. But sometimes we get the idea from people purposefully perhaps getting media attention by misbehaving that that's a general rule. That is not what the data supports. So the point is that you can actually be optimistically biased and maybe think that you are less likely to be at risk than other people and still follow the rules. And of course, the more you follow the rules, ironically, the lower your risk estimation ought to become. So if you do everything you're supposed to do and you see other people not doing everything they're supposed to do, then you might actually accurately conclude that you are somewhat less at risk than other people.
Talking to Marie Helwig-Larsen, professor of psychology at Dickinson College, talking about the optimism bias, why it can lead us astray. Optimism can be a good thing, but our brains are built in such a way that we can underestimate the risk for us in a situation like, say, a pandemic. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your questions about the psychology behind this, whether you see this in yourself or the people around you, how we estimate risks, whether it's a disease or something else, and whether we get safe about it, whether we take precautions. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Now, Marie, we've been talking about kind of things at an individual level so far. The optimistic bias evaluates risk for ourselves. Part of the story here is how we evaluate whether we're putting others at risk. And you've written more recently about a Danish concept of looking toward the good of society as part of what's motivating our behavior there. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So I'm a Danish and I'm currently actually living in Copenhagen. And I was fascinated by the Danish prime minister in March, Mette Frederiksen, who said that this was really a time to come together and protect each other. And she used a word that had not been used very frequently in Denmark. It was actually last used right before World War II by the then prime minister, encouraging Danes to take whatever precautions and rationing whatever was necessary at that time. And the Danish word is samfundssind, and it literally means, samfund means society and sind means perspective or mindset. So it means to consider the needs of society above your own. And the argument, of course, was that maybe you don't think you need to wear a mask, but we need you to wear a mask because you are protecting other people. We don't know whether you need a vaccine, but your vaccine taking will also protect vulnerable people who are not able to perhaps get the vaccine. So what I was interested in the article that I wrote was to see whether researchers had actually looked at this idea of what you in English would call community spirit or civic engagement or civic mindedness, this idea that you look outward instead of inward and think about how others can be helped by your actions, even if you don't think that they are necessary for yourself. And I found that researchers actually have looked at a construct that's called social capital, which refers to this idea that in some communities, and like you said, this is at the community level rather than the individual level, but you can actually measure the extent to which people seem to invest in local communities. And researchers have looked at this idea of social capital, for example, how many people donate blood or has signed up for organ donations or vote in a local community. And that actually, in research shows, does predict people following COVID precautions and social distancing. So it turns out that communities that do have civic engagement, including in the United States, where it was done at the county level, actually do, in fact, engage in more precautionary behaviors and have actually fewer COVID deaths.
Now, here's another wrinkle. If there's a blizzard, I could see the snow. I know I better not drive. I might be endangering myself or others. The Danes before World War II, they knew of the risk of a Nazi invasion. I can't see a virus. I don't see, I'm not in emergency rooms. I don't see the horror stories going on there. Is there something about this kind of invisible threat that makes it harder for us to overcome the optimism bias and recognize the risk? We are talking to Marie Helwig Larson. We'll get to the answer to that question in just a few moments. Marie is a professor of psychology at Dickinson College. We are talking about the psychology behind the optimism bias, why it leads us to misread the risk of something like a pandemic. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about this optimism bias? Have you seen this play out in your community? What has motivated you to take action, whether it's wearing a mask or social distancing? What do you think leads people to sometimes underestimate a risk? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now about the optimism bias. That's how we believe bad things don't happen to us, but to other people. We underestimate the risk of something happening to us built into our brains and how that can impact how we've approached the COVID-19 pandemic. Marie Helwig Larson is with us, professor of psychology at Dickinson College. You could join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. And I want to hear how you evaluate a risk, whether it's a pandemic or the risk of driving in bad weather or whatever it might be. Do you sometimes think you worry about it for other people, but not for yourself? Or do you see other people taking risks that you would not? What is different between you and them? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Marie, before we took that pause there, I was asking about the nature of this particular problem. A virus we can't see. Most of us aren't in emergency rooms seeing the worst impacts of it. Does that make it harder for us to evaluate the risk?
Absolutely. So personal experience often overrides statistics or things we read in the paper. So knowing a person who has suffered specifically hugely affects people and perhaps can make them more anxious than perhaps is necessary given the objective facts. So we are very influenced by things we have seen and experienced, and that, of course, cuts in the other direction too. So if you know 20 people who have had COVID and had very mild symptoms, you might also not pay attention to the number of people who have died and instead overwhelmingly see your personal experiences as being more important. So personal experience is very important, and it's hard for us to understand data and numbers. Although in the data we collected this spring, interestingly, people who lived in counties in the United States that had higher infection rates did judge their personal risk as somewhat higher than people who lived in March, where there was a lot of diversity in the U.S., who lived in counties that had fewer cases. So I think COVID is similar to other risk events, but in some ways also unique because we actually don't know every day how many people die in car accidents necessarily. That's not in the paper every day. We don't know exactly whether you would get decayed teeth if you skip brushing your teeth. So we are sensitive to risk information, but we also interpret it in a way that's biased to our own pre-existing conclusions.
Now, do we have a tendency to sometimes go to the opposite extreme and take a very remote risk and amplify it in our minds and maybe our behavior?
Yes. So events that seem that are unfamiliar to us seem more scary. So every time there's a new technology, such as the cell phone, or maybe some of you remember the microwave, people become very, very frightened of unfamiliar risk. And of course, COVID is both familiar and unfamiliar at the same time. We're certainly not familiar with infections that are so deadly in our communities. So, but then eventually it becomes more familiar and we can actually reduce without any other changes our perceptions of the risk. So familiarity is important. It's also important how high what researchers call dread. So nuclear power incidents or nuclear meltdowns are very high in dread because they are catastrophic in nature. So our communities and ourselves are not affected necessarily directly. It's hard to see how we're affected by many people who are not us dying in our communities. And that's, of course, many people have said, well, you need to think about that it taxes the hospitals in a way that will affect everyone. So we are very sensitive to personal experiences, for good and bad, like you said.
We're talking to Marie Helwig-Larsen, professor of psychology at Dickinson College, talking about the psychology of our reaction to a kind of slow motion disaster like a pandemic, and how things like what's known as the optimism bias can lead us to underestimate the risk to ourselves and maybe make us less likely to change our behavior in ways that protect ourselves and others. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Marie, do you have thoughts on how, I guess, in any situation we can check ourselves? We can know that optimism bias might be lurking out there and to figure out when it's at play and when we need to try to override it.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think that we fall prey to being too overconfident about our risk estimation. And it's good to just accept that you are biased. So I think we can all consider that we might be engaging in what we call motivated cognition, which is basically looking for reasons to support your views or behaviors instead of actually looking at objective facts. So you can also seek valid and reliable information. Facts are good. We do have facts about the efficacy of mask wearing and social distancing that's out there. And of course, like we talked about with Samfundsind or community engagement, you can reframe the task from being about you to being about your community or other people. So get the vaccine, maybe not for yourself, but for your community. And the last thing we talked a little bit about is that you can just drop the whole risk estimation and you can just say, you know what? I don't know what the risk is of wearing a helmet or not wearing a helmet biking in Copenhagen, but probably bike helmet wearing is a good idea. So I'm going to wear one. So sometimes we don't need to actually figure out all the exact details of how to figure out my daily distance multiplied by what time of day I ride divided by two, right? You could also just wear a helmet, get the vaccine, wear the mask, do the social distancing, wear the seatbelt, brush your teeth, right? And then skip the most likely biased attempt at trying to actually estimate your risk.
You just referred to another bias that I think is an important issue to think about, not just in pandemic response, that once we've made up our mind about something or we've had that initial gut reaction, we will see facts or information or arguments that agree with us and we'll trust those.
Yes.
And the ones that don't, well, we reject those no matter what the source is. I think it's called confirmation bias, if I have that right. How do we get over that?
Yep, that's exactly correct. Well done. So the confirmation bias definition is this tendency that's very, very well established as well, and I'm sure we all do it, including the researchers, which is the tendency to search for, interpret, or favor, or recall information that confirms or supports our own beliefs. So this kind of biased search then leads to a biased interpretation, and it actually leads to overconfidence that you are correct. So social media actually amplifies the confirmation bias because we're less exposed to other perspectives. And that's actually going back to our earlier point about community spirit. One of the benefits of going out into the community is that you're going to be exposed to other perspectives that are not your own. And we're not terribly good at that. And polarization in our society has made that worse, but that's always been the case. So try to Google the opposite of what you think, and you'll be surprised at least being challenged to have a different perspective instead of just Googling what you already think to be true, which will then confirm your prior beliefs.
Let's bring on a caller. Sue is with us in Green Bay. Sue, hello. Oops, Sue, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead. What did you want to bring up?
Oh, I already brought it up to the girl that answered the phone. Can you hear me okay? I've got the speaker on my phone.
Yeah, we're just about out of time, Sue. I'll sum up your point that was passed on to me. Sue said she was at a meeting where not everybody obeyed the mask protocol. So when it's not us, Marie, is there a good way to talk to someone else, maybe less confrontational, I don't know, to get them to follow the rules as well?
It's a tricky interpersonal task to call someone out on a behavior, it can be much more effective to agree before the meeting what the rules are. So not handling it during the situation, this can also work well with friends and family. Agree beforehand about where you're meeting, whether you're wearing masks, whether you're giving each other hugs, and then say, if those are not the rules you can live by, then please don't come. So try and not have it be a confrontation in the moment, but instead agree upon it beforehand and get everyone on board can work much better than a confrontation in that moment.
And Marie, in our last minute or so, are you hopeful that going through all of this together, we'll have a chance of reinforcing that idea of social solidarity we were talking about earlier?
Yeah, definitely. So I think that the vaccine is a perfect opportunity to think about how we now have a possible answer that will help us return to hugging and going out and not wearing masks. And if we think about how that can benefit all of us together, that will move us forward to be done with the pandemic.
Marie, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Marie Helwig-Larsen is a professor of psychology at Dickinson College. She joined us today to talk about optimism bias. This is when you think bad things are less likely to happen to you and how it's played out during the pandemic. Follow up to a conversation we had with her last spring at the outset. She'd been writing and thinking about it, and she's been doing some research on it ever since then.